Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to explore a really interesting concept from some research papers you shared from Greenline Partners. And it's about
Right.
stocks that act like bonds.
Interesting.
Get this. They can potentially bring stability to your portfolio even when the market gets kind of bumpy.
Okay.
So let's dive in and see what these so-called bond-like stocks are all about.
It really challenges the traditional way we think about stocks versus bonds. We usually think of stocks as risky and bonds as safe.
Right.
But what if certain stocks could offer a level of stability similar to bonds, even during times of market volatility?
Okay, that definitely has my attention.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of companies are we talking about here? How can a stock possibly act like a bond?
Well, think about companies that sell essential goods and services.
Okay.
Things people need no matter what the economy is doing.
Right.
Food, healthcare, utilities. Okay. These companies tend to have stable and predictable cash flows, much like bonds. Examples include Coca-Cola, Johnson & Johnson, and Con Edison.
So instead of getting your steady income from bond coupons, you're looking at dividends from these types of companies.
Right.
It's like getting the best of both worlds, right?
Right.
A bond stability with the potential upside of stocks,
mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool, but are there any downsides?
Well, of course, there's a catch.
Right.
Even though these stocks exhibit bond-like characteristics, they're still stocks.
Sure.
They face competition, market fluctuations, and all the other risks that come with equities.
So they're a hybrid, not a pure bond replacement.
Right.
I see. Now, Greenline Partners didn't just identify these bond-like stocks. They actually tried to replicate their performance using a mix of traditional stocks and bonds.
Yeah.
What did they find?
They discovered something pretty remarkable. A portfolio with 80% S&P 500 and 60% long-term treasury bonds closely mimic the behavior of those bond-like sectors.
Really?
This suggests a significant portion of these stocks' performance is tied to interest rate movements, much like bonds.
Wait, so you're telling me that by holding these specific stocks, I might be indirectly gaining exposure to bonds and their sensitivity to interest rates?
Exactly.
That's an interesting connection I hadn't considered before.
It really highlights how seemingly different types of investments can actually be intertwined in unexpected ways.
So we've established that these bond-like stocks exist.
Right.
But how do they actually perform when the market takes a downturn? Did Greenline Partners look into that?
They did. They analyzed how bond-like stocks performed during periods when bonds actually outperformed stocks.
Yeah, okay.
Like the deflationary 1930s and the post-dot-com bubble in the early 2000s.
That's a clever way to test their resilience. So how do they hold up?
In both cases, those bond-like sectors demonstrated impressive resilience. They even outperformed broader equity indices during those periods.
Wow.
This is because their bond-like characteristics act as a buffer during tougher economic conditions.
Interesting. Now, how do these bond-like stocks stack up against those riskier high-yield bonds we often hear about?
Yeah.
Are they in the same league?
Greenline Partners found that bond-like stocks and high-yield bonds actually share a similar balance of equity and interest rate exposure.
So depending on my risk tolerance and tax situation, I might find more attractive opportunities in bond-like stocks than venturing into the sometimes unpredictable world of junk bonds.
It's possible. It's all about having more tools in your investing toolbox and choosing the ones that best align with your individual goals and circumstances.
Speaking of popular investing trends, this whole conversation is making me think about the rise of low volatility strategies.
Mm-hmm.
They've become quite popular for investors seeking a smoother ride. Did Greenline Partners have anything to say about this approach?
They did. And what's often overlooked is that these low volatility strategies, which focus on stocks with historically low price fluctuations, they often end up overweighting those same defensive bond-like sectors we've been talking about.
So my low volatility portfolio might actually be more sensitive to interest rate changes than I realize.
There you go.
It's like a bond bet in disguise.
Yeah.
That's a really important point for investors to understand.
It really raises an important question about what truly makes an investment defensive time? Greenline Partners argues that simply chasing low volatility isn't enough.
They emphasize the importance of valuation as well, right? Especially in the current market environment.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They warn against blindly piling into certain sectors just because they've historically been stable.
Right.
It's crucial to consider whether you're paying a fair price for that stability.
So instead of just buying consumer staples because they've weathered past storms, I should be looking for opportunities where those stable earnings are being offered at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
It's like getting a discount on stability, which sounds pretty appealing.
Precisely. To illustrate this point, they analyzed 8 major market crashes since 1970. Their findings were quite revealing.
I'm really curious to hear what they discovered. Did they find any patterns or specific sectors that consistently outperformed during these market downturns?
They did, and it might surprise you. The most offensive strategy wasn't about chasing sectors labeled as stable or low volatility. It was about seeking value in areas of the market that were underappreciated or overlooked.
So being a contrarian and looking for value is key even when the market is in turmoil. That's a valuable insight, but I'd love to see some specific examples from their analysis. Can we dive into a few of those market crashes?
Absolutely. Let's rewind back to the 1970s when the Nifty 50 bubble burst. This was a time when a select group of large cap growth stocks were considered must-own investments regardless of their sky-high valuations.
Those were the blue chips, the darlings of the market back then, companies like IBM, Xerox, and Polaroid.
Right.
But their popularity had pushed their prices to unsustainable levels, hadn't it?
Exactly. And when the bubble finally burst, those high-flying growth stocks came crashing down. Meanwhile, out-of-favor sectors like energy and small-cap value stocks, which had been largely ignored during the Nifty 50 frenzy, actually held up quite well.
It's a classic case of the tortoise and the hare. Slow and steady with a focus on value can win the race, especially when those high-growth hares get a little too far ahead of themselves. Did this pattern repeat itself in other market crashes?
It did. Fast forward to the dot-com bubble of the late 1990s and early 2000s, we saw a similar pattern emerge. Investors were obsessed with high-growth technology stocks, pushing valuations to dizzying heights.
It was the era of irrational exuberance, as they say.
Right. And when that exuberance turned to despair, those once-mighty tech giants suffered massive losses. Once again, those less glamorous value stocks, particularly small-cap value, proved to be more resilient in the face of the crash.
So it seems like there's a recurring theme here. When valuations get out of whack, those undervalued, less loved sectors tend to offer a greater margin of safety.
Exactly. Now, the 2008 global financial crisis was a bit different. This downturn wasn't triggered by a specific sector bubble. It was a systemic crisis that spread throughout the entire financial system.
It was a time of extreme fear and uncertainty. No one knew how bad things would get or how long the pain would last. So how did the different sectors perform during that crisis?
We saw a bit of a twist this time. It wasn't small cap value that held up the best. It was actually the consumer staples sector.
Those companies selling essential goods and services, that makes sense even in a crisis that wasn't confined to a particular sector. Those companies still provided a degree of relative stability.
Keep in mind, though, that valuations still played a role. Going into the crisis, growth stocks had fallen out of favor after the dot-com bust, making them relatively cheaper compared to value stocks. And within the consumer staples sector, those companies with more reasonable valuations tended to perform better.
So even in a panic, it's not enough to blindly seek refuge in those traditionally defensive sectors. You still have to be mindful of price and look for value.
That's a great takeaway. Greenline's analysis of the 2008 crisis reinforces the importance of valuation, even within seemingly safe havens. It's like finding shelter from a storm, but you still want to make sure the roof doesn't leak.
That's a great analogy. So we've looked at the Nifty 50 bubble, the dot-com bubble, and the 2008 financial crisis. Greenline analyzed five more market crashes, right? What was the overall message from their research?
The message was remarkably consistent across all eight crashes. A truly defensive strategy is not about chasing the latest hot sector or blindly following a low volatility index. It's about being a disciplined value investor, seeking out those pockets of the market where solid fundamentals are being priced at a discount.
It sounds like a strategy that requires patience, a willingness to go against the crowd, and a long-term perspective. But the potential rewards, especially during those inevitable market downturns, could be substantial.
Absolutely. And this brings us to an important question that Greenline raises, particularly relevant to today's market environment. Is the current popularity of U.S. technology stocks, especially those with high valuations, creating potential vulnerabilities for investors?
That's a great question. We've seen this movie before, haven't we? When a particular sector or style of investing becomes the consensus, favorite valuations can get detached from reality. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's definitely something to consider. You know, when a sector becomes the market darling, valuations can get stretched, setting the stage for a potential correction.
Right.
No one can predict the timing, but history shows us that these trends tend to reverse eventually.
That's a sobering thought. Greenline seems to be suggesting that investors might want to diversify away from those high-flying areas of the market and explore other opportunities. Where should we be looking?
Well, they suggest exploring those unloved, undervalued sectors like bonds, small-cap value stocks, and even non-U.S. equities, which have been lagging behind the U.S. market for quite some time.
It's all about taking a contrarian approach, looking for value where others are fearful, and potentially positioning a portfolio for greater resilience in the face of future market turbulence. It makes sense, but I'm curious, did Greenline's research look at bond-like stocks in international markets?
That's a great question. But unfortunately, their research focused primarily on the U.S. market.
Okay.
However, their findings raise some interesting questions about whether similar dynamics might exist in other countries.
That makes me think, wouldn't the concept of bond-like stocks depend a lot on the specific country's economic structure and which industries are considered essential there?
Absolutely. For example, in emerging markets with rapidly growing populations and rising incomes, consumer staples might behave more like growth stocks than those steady bond-like investments we see in the U.S.
Mm.
Their cash flows would be more tied to that expanding consumer base.
That's a good point. And what about those state-owned enterprises often found in utilities or natural resource sectors? Would those be considered bond-like?
Not necessarily. Their connection to government policies and regulations could make their performance less predictable, even if they're providing essential services.
Mm.
It's not a simple one-to-one comparison.
It seems like identifying those true bond-like stocks in international markets would require a whole other level of analysis, considering the political and regulatory landscape, industry dynamics, and even cultural factors.
It highlights the importance of understanding the underlying context and the unique factors that can shape a company's performance in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
You know, labels can be misleading.
So Greenline's U.S.-based research provides a helpful framework, but it's not a one-size-fits-all approach when looking globally. Now, switching gears to valuation, are there certain international markets or regions that might be particularly attractive for that value-focused contrarian approach?
Well, remember, when Greenline analyzed those market crashes, they found that non-U.S. stocks tended to experience smaller drawdowns than U.S. stocks in several instances. That's something to keep in mind.
So there might be opportunities to find undervalued gems in those overlooked markets. It could be a way to add another layer of diversification and potential downside protection.
It's worth exploring. For example, European and Japanese markets have been lagging behind the U.S. for quite some time, and there might be hidden value in those areas that hasn't yet been fully recognized by the broader market.
Especially if those markets are less influenced by those high-growth tech stocks that have been driving valuations in the U.S. to such lofty levels, it's definitely food for thought.
It's all about being open-minded, looking beyond familiar names and trends, and considering those pockets of value that might be hiding in plain sight.
This deep dive has really opened my eyes to the complexity and nuance of defensive investing. It's not just about finding safe stocks and hoping for the best. It's about understanding the drivers of stability, being mindful of valuation, and being willing to embrace a contrarian perspective.
It's a journey of continuous learning and discovery. And as Greenline's research has shown, it's a journey that can lead to more resilient portfolios and greater peace of mind for investors.
Well said. I hope this conversation has inspired you to think differently about building a portfolio that can weather those inevitable market storms. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.